This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It is 9:09. We're getting close to the promised land, but I guess we can call it the suburbs of the promised land. The promised suburbs. Ian McNulty joins us as he does every Friday morning at this time, talking about food and dining and culture. He writes about it for the Times-Picayune and New Orleans Advocate. And before we start, let me invite the audience in. 504-260-1870. Let us know where you've been eating, where you've been drinking. If you have any questions about where to eat or drink, I'll pass them along to Ian McNulty. With that, we welcome in Mrs. McNulty's son, Ian. How you doing, Ian?
I am very happy to be with you again, Tommy. It really is my favorite time of the week because we've gotten through it. Even the short 4-day week was sort of a week, wasn't it?
It really has been. It really has been. Certainly more so. Yeah. It seems like sometimes, and I don't know why, but the 4-dayers might be worse than 5-dayers. I don't know what it is. It just throws everything off.
Well, I certainly am ready for the weekend, and I come to you with a full heart, actually. I've had a week of reporting on stories in the New Orleans food world that have been quite full of heart and soul. Some of them a bit sad, actually, but all reflecting different parts of this culture that we have and that we value in the food world of New Orleans. Let me start with a really good one, and it's not an obvious one. You and I talk about restaurants all the time. Of course, that's why we're here, and I hope we'll get some comments from our listeners out there on places that they've been lately, or questions that they have about where to go next, because that is the spirit of it. Mm-hmm. But you know, undergirding all of this culture are people, and sometimes these people are hard at work at restaurants. Sometimes these people are the actual customers that value and support places and go and you know contribute their personality to these dining rooms and these bars. That's part of the puzzle. And sometimes they're far behind the scenes doing work that ensures all of this can happen. And one of them, I just want you to think about New Orleans without New Orleans French bread. I mean, not a baguette, not the thing that you had in Paris, not the great chewy loaf that you picked up at Celtica Bakery out in Lakeview or Boulangerie on Magazine Street. I mean New Orleans French bread, the thing that adheres around the fried shrimp in your po' boy, the thing that contains the roast beef gravy in your po' boy, right? It's a really distinct animal. It's a New Orleans creation, and it really is the foundation for po' boy shops everywhere, restaurants that serve po' boys, traditional New Orleans restaurants that use this stuff as table bread. And they don't make it like this anywhere else. If you tried to get po' boys in different cities, they might nail the fried seafood. They might get the roast beef kind of close. But if it's not the same bread, it's not a po' boy. The po' boy is the key first ingredient that differentiates the po' boy from any other kind of sandwich. That makes it not a hoagie, not a sub. And that is made in New Orleans by a vanishing few number of people. The lion's share of it is produced by one bakery, Leidenheimer Baking Company. And when I say lion's share, I mean like I'm guessing here, but it's something of the order of magnitude of 80%. Mm. The other big name is John Genduza Bakery, very old historic bakery in Gentilly. They make probably somewhere around 10%, maybe, and then all other producers make up the rest of it, another 10%. I'm talking about the po' boy bread that goes out to restaurants. Hey,
let me just jump in for a second for people that are new to the area. This is not the stuff you get in a grocery store. Not – just explain that for a second, if you would.
Please. Yeah, no. It is the bread is – it is a distinct New Orleans character, right? It is this – it has this brittle crust and this pillowy interior, and it's just strong enough to contain everything that you can throw into a po' boy, but you also don't have to fight with it. Mm-hmm. And it's a very distinct process that makes this, and making it, you know, a couple loaves at a time at an artisanal bakery could be possible, but making it on, frankly, an industrial scale that's required to supply thousands and thousands of loaves a day for all the po' boy shops and restaurants and corner stores and convenience stores that make po' boys and sandwiches and serve it as table bread is a huge undertaking. And the point here is that only a handful of people do this now, and the leading one by far, far and away, is Leidenheimer. So if something were to happen to Leidenheimer, like they... Well, I'll just say it. If they didn't manage the business properly, if the next generation of the family didn't want to carry on the mantle, it would be trouble. There would be trouble in New Orleans. It would be a really serious question of where you're going to get your next po'boy.
So let me ask you this. Let me jump in real quick. Yep. Is that different and distinct than the French bread that they make at Vietnamese bakeries?
It is, yes. Okay. And I'm a big fan of the bread that they make at Vietnamese bakeries for your banh mi sandwiches. Mm-hmm. It's typically a pistolet. Now, there's some similarities, but it's a difference in the texture, the maltiness. And, like, if this sounds particular, yes, it is. Ask somebody how they like their coffee. Ask somebody how they like their martini. It is the particulars that make the thing. And in New Orleans, it is the flavor of that New Orleans French bread that they do not know that well in France, by the way. It's a New Orleans thing that really makes it.
And the texture and the crust, and if you're not vacuuming after you eat it, it's not the right bread, right?
It yields crumbs in the way that eating a morning call or Café du Monde beignet yields powdered sugar.
Precisely.
Very New Orleans experience.
Which are some good, which is good eating in and of itself, the crumbs.
Of course.
You've got to lap those up with whatever bread you got left. But go ahead. I'm sorry, Ian.
And so the reason I'm bringing all this up is the good news that I spent a lot of time with the family that runs Leidenheimer exploring this idea of their future. Because, you know, you have to think about these things. And it is in very good hands is the moral here. It is here's a family that is taking very intentional steps not just to hand off the business eventually, but to prepare the next generation for the undertaking with experience, but also philosophy and these ideas that they talk about there of responsibility to the culture that they represent, their endeavors to remain relevant in a changing restaurant world and to grow the company. These portions of our culture that intersect with our restaurants are businesses, and they have to make sense in a business mm-hmm. capacity for the cultural end to survive and for us to have these pleasures that we share as New Orleans people. And it was very uplifting for me to spend time with the Leidenheimer family and to see just how they are navigating the next generation. And it was a chance to do a story for once that wasn't about something closing or something that we're losing or even something new that's opening up, but something that is continuing with a really intentional, smart, passionate drive. And it was a really uplifting story, and I encourage everybody to go check out the full read, which is on NOLA.com.
You know what else you made me think of just now, if I may interrupt for a moment, is that please. I know somebody with a very successful business, not in the food industry at all, but his kid's got no interest in it, so he found somebody, and he's trying to teach him the business and getting him ready to take it over. But if the Leidenheimers, for example, if the family had decided they don't want to be in the bread business anymore, what would happen then, right?
Exactly the point, Tommy. Exactly the point. And so I was really happy to be able to shine a light on a family that is managing that and taking very intentional steps to make that happen. I think it just underscores how much people and their decisions and what they value really power this food culture that we talk about all the time and that we enjoy together and that, frankly, our city, our community relies on to draw people here that we use to welcome the visitors that fuel so much of the economy here. So there's big ideas around the simplicity of the loaf that you slice open, slather with mayo and gravy. And it was really uplifting for me to spend some time with the people who make it happen. And that's just the thing, Tommy. I just want to underscore how, as people who participate in our food culture, how it really does come down to the people and the decisions that people make and the things that they value and how they express it. And that's why my heart was filled with some uplift this week.
Good. What else did you do? And I know you wrote about supporting restaurants during the summertime, right?
Yeah, this is a tough time. I mean, I feel like we talk about it a lot this time of year. It's the slow season for restaurants coming up, and so you hear about a lot of closures, and unfortunately I have to report on some of these, and concerns. I feel like the Grim Reaper, Tommy. I mean, I feel like I've written about the openings of these places, and then I have to write about the end of them like an obituary writer. The latest just dropped last night, Bywater American Bistro, the second restaurant for the chef, Nina Compton, just an acclaimed chef, a real asset for our culinary community, a leader, I'd say, in our culinary community, is closing in the Bywater this weekend. Her first restaurant, Compare Le Pen, which is a brilliant blend of her Caribbean roots and, you know, modern upscale French and Italian influences, and New Orleans is right in there. That continues in the Warehouse District, and actually next week is marking its 10-year anniversary, so cheers to that. But her other restaurant's closing this weekend, and it underscores how tough it is out there for restaurants, and even a chef with national acclaim and a national following. She's a James Beard Award winner. She was on Top Chef, and people all over the country know who she is. They have trouble making these things work in the summertime. And so they're shutting that one down. But again, Compare Le Pen, marking their 10th anniversary next week, and that's great. But it does make you think of all the places you love out there and how they need our support. And the answer for that support cannot simply be, okay, just go spend more money, because, you know, like you and I and most of the people listening to this, that's a limited resource. Mm-hmm. That's increasingly limited these days with all the costs that we are up against. But there are ways to do it smartly, and that's the subject of a column I just put out this morning. Just a couple quick examples. You know, if your income is steady through the year, just deploy a little bit more of it in the summertime. It'll go a longer way. If you buy gift cards for people at the holidays, buy them from restaurants right now, and then put them on ice until December or whenever you're going to give them to somebody. You've already got some of your holiday shopping done, and if 10 people did that in 1 month, that would make a huge difference for a small restaurant when the next Entergy bill drops, mm-hmm. or the next the AC breaks and they have to fix it on the spot. I mean, it's the little things like that really can make a big difference. Just flexibility with your schedule. Even in the summertime, there's a high demand for that 7 o'clock table on a Friday. Well, can you do dinner at? Can you cut out a little early, say at 5 o'clock on a sultry summer day? You know, your cocktail arrives that much sooner, and you're giving them another turn on the table. Same goes with maybe a later reservation. You know, have your own little happy hour somewhere until sunset, and then get an 8 o'clock reservation. You're helping them out a lot. Go on a weekday when it's a lot slower. That's the thing. You know, make good on that plan that you proposed with some friends to get together finally after festivals and all that when it's slow in the summertime, and take 4 or 6 of you out to a restaurant on a Wednesday or Thursday. Mm-hmm. It's using the money you're already going to spend anyway in a more intentional way to help restaurants when the chips are down. And these little things do add up and make a big difference for the places that you value.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And love and want to have around just to get them through until the upswing comes. These are viable businesses. They're just having to navigate a very difficult turn in the business cycle. That is summer, that as we all know. So if you go to NOLA.com, there's the full read on it with some more ideas and a little more commentary on why it matters.
I'm getting some text here about suggestions for places to eat and drink and so forth. I'll pass them along to Ian McNulty when we come back, because he is the go-to guy. If you got any of them, any questions, that is 504-260-1870. You want to try a restaurant? Not quite sure whether you're going to like what they have or not. Ian's probably been there, or maybe you're going to an iconic place. You want to know what to order? Ian can steer you right. 504-260-1870. Do not text and drive. Tommy Tucker back in a flash with Ian McNulty here on WWL. Best time of the week talking to Ian McNulty about eating and drinking. And then we're going to talk to Bobby Hebert, co-host of Sports Talk, former, you know, Bobby Hebert is. We'll talk to him about the Rattla, and also about the new Saints quarterback, Shuck, and what he's seeing out of him. I'm thinking about Shuck because I'm thinking about oysters, and somebody texted in going to Sal and Judy's in Lacombe Sunday. Ian, what do you recommend to order?
Red. Just think red. Red sauce. I mean, when I think of that place, I think of Sunday supper, right? If I was lucky enough to be born into an Italian family and Nona had you over, just lean into that, right? I mean, the meatballs, anything with the red sauce, just period, end of story. That's what I want when I go there. I don't want to mess around with anything else.
So the red lead, right? What about 20-year-old daughter's college boyfriend visiting NOLA? They want a steakhouse with less formal, a cool vibe.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're in the right town. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is Charlie's Steakhouse. You know, it doesn't get much cooler than that. It's, it's this classic from the 1930s, and it still feels that way. If you haven't been in a while, you know, Charlie's was one of these places that almost slipped away, you know, several times after Katrina. And then, you know, sadly, the man who brought it back, Matthew Dwyer, he passed away a few years back. And I mean, these are transitions that could have spelled the end of a legend. But, new people stepped up, and instead of transforming it into something else, they've done a really good job of keeping it what it is, which is this charismatic, old-school New Orleans steakhouse where, you know, they won't even give you a menu. They just sort of recite it to you. Or if they go really old-school, they'll just tell you what they're having, what you're having. You know, I mean, I've sat at that table before where the waiter would sort of dictate that, you know, all the women have to have filet mignons and all the men have T-bones, because that's the way it is. You know, T-bone's too much for a woman. That got that kind of attitude. Then the woman would say, no, hell no, give me the T-bone, and shock the world by finishing the whole thing off. It's a place of big portions, big character. You start with a martini. You get the onion rings that are in no way, shape, or form rings. They're just fried onion strips, and they're wonderful. This sort of bouffant hairdo of fried onion. You get the wedge salad. You're going to take half of these sides home and eat them the next day, or maybe after midnight if you stay out all night. I've been on all these roads, Tommy. And the Crosstown, another one, just awesome with the character. And the quality of the steak, too, is the Steak Knife in Lakeview. It's been around for 50 years. It's a neighborhood institution. And when you go in there, you are in the clubhouse for the neighborhood. And if you're, it's up in Lakeview on Harrison. And it's loaded with character, but, you know, most of all, the steak is terrific.
Yeah,
so those would be ones that get the New Orleans character. You can go to steakhouses anywhere. You know, they're a trope of American dining. But you go to these places, and you feel the New Orleansness of it all.
Let's say if it's his daughter's college boyfriend, I'd start off with a burger at Port of Call and see how it goes before I go to a steakhouse. Somebody else wants to know about Crazy Johnny's in Metairie since the new restaurant opened. Have you been?
Yeah, sure. It's really delightful to see Crazy Johnny's back. It's a place that meant a lot to people. It was the loved joint out in Fat City for so many years. This is a new rendition. Okay, so that's the thing. Like, don't think that you're going back and it's going to look like the Crazy Johnny's you remember from 1998 or 2008. The place closed in 2014. It's a different era, right? It's a different restaurant, but it's bringing back kind of the spirit of the old Crazy Johnny's with the same recipes, the same fundamentals to the menu. And it's like a modern look. It's right on Vets. It's a little more sleek. It's not Crazy Johnny's started out as a smoky old bar with a steak special, you know, so it's not that, but it is a new take on the Crazy Johnny's legacy. And if you're a fan of, the filet mignon po' boy, that was the epic dish there. With the steak pieces cut up and soaked in this chunky garlic butter on French bread. We were talking about the French bread earlier. Mm-hmm. that's back in play, and I'm glad to see it.
And that was a while ago, so keep in mind the prices probably have gone up a little bit. Social in Madisonville, please have Ian describe Peruvian food.
Oh, yes. This one is on my list. I have not been to Social yet, but it was just pointed out to me by another food-loving vixen out there that I travel the roads with, and it's high on our list because I love Peruvian food. So this is a new place in Madisonville on the North Shore, and what you need to know about Peruvian food is that it is sort of this organic fusion of Spanish, Japanese, and indigenous South American cuisines, like the people of Peru, their food traditions, and then the colonial influence of Spain, and actually a tad of Italy too, and then the close relationship that Peru has with Japan. Peru is a big destination for immigration from Japan, and sort of the other end of the Pacific trading route for the seafood fleets, and so. It's a lot of wonderful seafood dishes. If you like raw fish, I love raw fish. They prepare it in a way you won't see at Japanese restaurants.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
But that is just vibrant with flavor. It's slices of raw fish with these real flavorful pepper sauces and garnishes. It's also these hearty stir fries kind of steak chopped up and stir fried with onions and served with fried rice. Mm. It's these dishes called cazas that are like these cylinder shaped things. They look like something out of even at humble Peruvian restaurants will have them, and they look like something out of a food show, a competition chef's show in their composition. They're these. Layered cylinders of whipped potato and maybe some seafood or chicken and avocado, and it's a really fascinating cuisine. It's different, it's fresh, but it's also hearty and fulfilling. The other places to get Peruvian food in town is Tito's on St. Charles Avenue in the Lower Garden District area, which does a terrific job, and then a real sleeper out in Kenner called Las Carnitas, which is a sort of a confusing name because carnitas are a Mexican pork dish that they do not serve at the restaurant called Las Carnitas. They're Peruvian food, not Mexican, but they kept the name from an old restaurant. But it's a great sort of hole in the wall for exactly these flavors I was describing. But Social, to your to the listener's question, is on my list for all the reasons I just described. A really vibrant fusion cuisine. Oh, and one more on that list. If you're interested, if this strikes a note with you, Peruvian cuisine. And by the way, Nobu, this huge name in sushi globally that has an outpost in Caesar's Casino now, known for sushi, but really what his flex was to add Peruvian elements to back into traditional Japanese cooking. So he put it on a much higher scale. But there's one more spot called Nikkei. And it is a tavern kitchen inside the Broadside, which is an event venue in Mid-City on Broad Street. It's next to the Broad movie theater. And you just walk up to the bar and you can order many of these dishes that I've talked about, these raw seafood dishes, these cazas, these stir fries, that just right from ordering a burger at the bar. So Nikkei is another interesting one to know about for sure.
Pleasure as always. Ian McNulty covers food and dining culture for the Times. Speaking to you, New Orleans Advocate. We'll talk to you next Friday. Have a great weekend and a great week, Ian McNulty. And you can just look up Ian McNulty. You find out everything he's got going. We're going to talk to Bobby Hebert when we come back, get his take on the Saints quarterback situation, the draft, and more. 9:38, traffic now, WWL. 9:44, 16 till 10. What better way to wrap up the week than with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, a good friend, and paid a lot of money to watch him throughout those years, and now to have him as a friend is an honor. How you doing, Bobby Hebert?
All right, Tommy, how you doing? Yeah, looks like the weekend's going to cooperate. We needed that rain, but it's a little too hot for me right now.
Me too.
It's kind of like July.
Yeah, I know, but it's supposed to be a little bit better this weekend. You know what I wanted to ask you? When it comes to you, with all the experience you got as a quarterback, and we'll get to Tyler Shuck in a minute, or to Rattler, or even the other, Jake Haener, I know from the time that I've spent in radio, I can listen and I can tell if somebody knows or if they don't know what they can do, what they can't do. Other people may not know, but I know because of the experience. When it comes to football field, not so much. You, on the other hand, when it comes to the football field, you do know what they know and what they don't know. So what are you looking for when it comes to evaluating a quarterback, if it's Tyler Shuck, if it's the Rattler, whomever?
Well, you have to know your role. You know, not everybody is going to be Joe Burrow or Pat Mahomes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have to have confidence in yourself. You have to be a little arrogant. You have to be a little cocky. But you also have to be humble. And you have to lead men. And to be that positive influence in the huddle, they have to know that, hey, that I'm going to hang in there tough. You hang in there tough. We're all in this together. And, you know, looking at what does it takes to win. Yeah, you know, you don't have to have the unbelievable numbers. And I said this yesterday on Sports Talk after, you know, we witnessed the second OTA practice. Mm-hmm. Spencer Rattler, I think all the adversity that he's faced, mm-hmm. you know, he was at Oklahoma, and then all of a sudden he's the man top quarterback in the nation. And then along comes Caleb Williams and beats him out. Mm-hmm. And then he's no longer the man. What, you're just going to give up? So all of a sudden, you know, he ends up transferring to South Carolina. Caleb Williams follows the coach to USC. So it's a continuous process. And you know, you got to be able to weather the storm. Like, for instance, last year I thought Spencer Rattler, he went in there, he played with a lot of confidence. Tommy, this is unbelievable. If you look how drastic his game was, you know, okay, can you play four quarters to help the team win? Mm-hmm. If you look like Rattler when he had like 22 sacks, first off, you got to get rid of the ball. You cannot take those sacks. Tommy, I wasn't no rocket science, but I had that clock in my head. Mm-hmm. I played one season. I only got sacked 15 times in
16
games.
So let me stop you 1 second. So right there, what you're looking at, just as I'm listening to somebody and I'm saying, well, no, he wasn't prepared, or he should have known that, or she wasn't listening, or she would have asked that. You're watching it, and you're seeing if, for example, like what, missing reads or something?
You're holding the ball too long. You have to live to fight another day.
Gotcha, okay.
Not every play is going to be a great play.
I got you.
That's the thing with Shedeur Sanders, too. I know Colorado's offensive line sucked, but he took still way too many sacks.
All right, so that's one. What else?
Okay, Tommy, he was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Can you be consistent throughout the game? Mm-hmm. Don't cost your team. You don't have to be, like I said, Pat Mahomes or Joe Burrow. You know, there's 32 teams. It's not 32 starting quarterbacks. There's always about 18 or 20. But then you have a handful that are truly unbelievable. Mm-hmm. It just shows you how hard it is to play the position. But you look at a drastic first and second half splits that Spencer Rattler had. You know, he had a quarterback rating in the first two quarters of 103.5. 103.3 to be exact. That's unbelievable. But can you do that throughout the game? Because teams are going to make halftime adjustments and all that. That was in the first half of games. In the second half, his quarterback rating was 46.5. It was like, is that the same guy?
So what would he have to have? Bobby, what would he have to make those adjustments? What ability would he have to make, or does that go to the coordinator? I know it's a team sport, but just in general when it comes to the quarterback.
Well, you just can't try and do too much.
Okay.
You know, you start getting desperate. You start trying to force the ball. Mm-hmm. Now, ultimately, the coach could help you in that regard. And, you know, not putting you in positions where, play really wasn't going to work. That's why it's a total team effort. And I was smart enough to know I played with the Dome Patrol. Mm-hmm. I know our defense. We had a top five defense. And so say, how can we win the game? I remember Coach Moore, who just turned 90 years of age. It's amazing he's still doing leg presses at 90 years of age. He would say, Bobby, look, if we score 23 points or more, we should never lose a game. Or that's how we're going to get the double-digit wins. And then he would challenge the defense. If you shouldn't give up 17 points or more. So all of a sudden, that's why how we won 12 games twice. We won 11 games, won the NFC West, won We were 10-6 in 88. We didn't even, make the playoffs. But that was the winning formula and understanding what it takes. It's not like you got to crush everybody like we did against the Broncos and John Elway. We beat them 42-0. Mm-hmm. That was just everything was going your way. But things aren't always going to go your way. So how do you figure out to win the game?
Right,
and
so
really, when you look at scoring offense and defense, Tommy, it's not that much different than it was 30, 40 years ago. Now, because of the rule changes favoring the offense, I'd say you probably got to score a field goal more. So if you score 27 points or more, you should never lose. And then defense, well, if you're giving them about 20 points, then that's a winning formula.
Before we run out of time, I want to get to, when it comes to evaluating quarterbacks, what you saw from I always call him Matt. I don't know why. Tyler Shuck at practice.
Well, I tell you what, he looks like he belongs, and I think that's a plus. A lot of experience. He's had adversity in his life, but I think I'm not worried about his injuries. He's had broken bones. Broken bones can heal within 4 or 6 weeks.
That's better than ligaments.
Yes, yeah. Anything with your shoulders, knees, elbows, and all like ligaments and all that stuff, soft tissue, that's way worse than broken bones. Because 4 or 6 weeks, and you just to me, that's bad luck when you break a bone. Or something, because he's not brittle. He's a big man. But I think that's going to be working his behalf that he's 27 years old. Oh, he's too old. What do you mean he's too old? No, but what if he plays 10 years for the Saints? He's right. Only I retired at 37. I mean, he's 37 years of age. So I think you get experience. He's not immature, and he can spin it.
That's what I wanted to ask you about spinning it. Tell me what you saw about a throw that – would you say as good as it gets in the history of the NFL? Tell me about that.
I'm telling you, he's a right-hander. He was sprinting out left, and, you got to square your shoulders, mm-hmm. and the coverage was great. He put it on a dime. It would be like he did the county or the parish fair, and the tire's 40 yards away, and he threw it through the tire.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm talking about a bullseye. And on the run, squaring his shoulders, going left, I go, whoa. That's as good as it gets in the history of the NFL. Because, you're throwing across your body. Mm-hmm. Maybe if you're left-handed, it'd be like you're going right. And then you're doing the same thing to the right side. You're on the move. No, that throw, now the receiver didn't make a great catch, a contested catch, because the coverage was awesome. Cedric Wilson, he could have came down with it. The Stutzman, the linebacker from Oklahoma, made a great play and ended up knocking it out of his hands. But that throw right there, but they both can spin it. Spencer Rattler. Looks like he's confident right now. And what's wrong with competition? A lot of these Gen Z kids and all that, oh, they just want to be given something. Well, there's nothing wrong with competition. Mm-hmm. The best man's going to win.
Totally agree.
Like Coach Morrow would say, one snap and clear. If you do good today, so what? You got to do good tomorrow. Let's say you didn't have your best day today. So what? One snap and clear. You got to forget it, move on. Now you got to do good the next day and the next day and the next day. That's how you compete, and it's better for the team. It makes you work hard as an individual. So I'm interested to see training camp because I tell you what, it's not like the thing to me, Spencer Rattler is really going to have to beat out Tyler Shuck because Tyler Shuck is Kellen Moore's guy. Mm-hmm. That is the quarterback Kellen Moore wanted, and he's the head coach. But so, I mean, if it don't work out for one of these quarterbacks eventually, then you go play for somebody else and kick ass. I mean,
you gotta
be a warrior.
When it comes to rolling left and being a right-hander and throwing it on a dime, like you said, that's analogous to hitting a golf ball left-handed if you're right-handed, right? It goes against every natural instinct you have. That's what you're saying? That's why it's so hard?
Yeah, because you're not stepping and throwing. Mm-hmm. You got to be able to square your shoulders, and it shows your arm strength. And then, I don't know if you call it luck. Like, maybe he could – the next 10 times, 9 out of the 10 wouldn't be that good, but he'd be in the vicinity. You can see he has that skill set. And a lot of guys might think, don't make that throw because it's probably going to get intercepted, you forcing it. It would be like, when not necessarily a hole-in-one, but let's say you're in the sand or you're chipping it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and you see it, and that was a great chip, and it went in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of times you get close to the cup, but you're not necessarily in, but – he has that in his his repertoire, that kind of throw. And I was impressed with that. But it'll be interesting. And I think the best friend for these young quarterbacks are, because we haven't won an NFL game, is I like our offensive line. I'm telling you, I'm encouraged by what we have at tackle. And if a Trevor Penning don't work out at left guard, well, then, sorry, you got to go play somewhere else. We're going to put another left guard in there. So to have four out of the five, I'm really, especially three, to send in the two tackles, I think we're going to be as good as it gets in the league coming up this season. Now, what does that mean, wins and losses? I don't know. We still can't be one before last stopping the run. So we got to – I'm telling you, Tom, I think it's a good season. And fans don't want to hear this, but you got to be a little
patient. I want to hear it. I definitely want to hear it.
If we go 7-10, I would not be discouraged. Not now, Bobby, that's a losing record. What are you talking about? That'd be two more wins, but we're trending in the right direction.
Not only do I want to hear it, I'm going to stop you while you're on a positive message there. Thank you, Bobby. Don't be a stranger. We'll talk to you again soon, all right?
All right, Tommy.
Appreciate you, man. All right, man. Bobby Hebert, y'all know who he is. We'll take a break. Come back, WWL.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.